Kaffee in seiner besten Form. Mit Cubo wird jeder Kaffee auf Knopfdruck zum Genussmoment. Denn mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo genießt du feinsten Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Vollmundige Aromen dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie und über 17 Sorten Kaffee für jeden Geschmack. Erlebe Premium-Kaffee schon ab 29 Euro. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
Stu does America.
Welcome to the program. Glenn Beck is going to be here in a couple of minutes to break down the judicial coup against Donald Trump. Cory Booker wrapped up his little political performance. That was really fun. We'll check in on his rage levels and see if he's all the way up to tears yet. Tears of rage. But we're going to start by doing Liberation Day. Happy Liberation Day, everybody. Welcome to it. Axios is going to scare you. They say Liberation Day is here. Brace yourself. Liberation Day, of course, kind of the way that Donald Trump has been talking about tariffs and the tariffs he's putting on today. Now, to be clear, we don't really know the full scope of this yet. As of taping time, little bits and pieces we know. We don't know everything. We don't know how long these things will last in the future. We don't know if they're long term or short term. We don't know much of anything when it comes to tariffs. We're going to talk a little bit of generality here. And of course, you know, one of the great things about doing this show for a long time at the same place, which is, you know, in this industry, not particularly common. One of the great things about that is you kind of know me, and it kind of eliminates the possibility of me trying to BS my way through a show. I think, frankly, you know, with the American people kind of being on the conservative side, at least on the right, being very much behind Donald Trump, kind of like whatever Donald Trump says is kind of the easy thing to say on the show. Whenever I disagree with Donald Trump, it's more difficult, frankly. It's a harder show to do because most people really like Donald Trump and like the things that he's doing. And of course, I have done many, many shows about that exact thing. There's a lot of things to like about what Donald Trump did in his first term and also so far here in his second term. So we do this sort of stuff all the time. And it's just easy. I could sit here and lie to you and tell you that I think this is going to be the most wonderful policy of all time if put through the way that it has been teased. But honestly, you know, I don't feel that way. I don't think that's true. I don't think this is a good policy at all when it comes to tariffs. And, you know that about me already. So I don't have to hide anything from you. I can just talk it through you in a kind of a normal adult way. There's a lot of smart people here, even at the police, who are much more on Trump's side on this particular policy. And you know what? That's okay. It's all right to have that conversation. We're adults. We can handle it. This is not like, say, like I'm always shocked at the way that people talk about this stuff online. You realize the online community is not always representative of the actual community. When I talk to people in real life about this stuff, It's an understandable conversation. There's a lot to get to on it. And, you know, my position on this kind of goes from some pretty basic concepts, right? Concepts that I think the conservative movement has embraced over a long period of time. Tariff, of course, is a tax. It's a tax on incoming goods. It's a tax, by the way, paid largely by U.S. business owners, not by the countries, but by U.S. business owners as they import goods. You know, I have some friends who are working in this industry. They're dealing with a lot of these stresses right now. They don't know what the tariffs are going to be. They don't know how high they're going to be. They don't know how they're going to make day-to-day work when they have to add 25% to their cost line. That's a difficult thing for people to do. And it does hurt U.S. companies. It does also hurt U.S. consumers who have to pay more. It also does benefit some workers in certain industries, those industries that are chosen for the benefits of those tariffs. That is something that is true. It's important not to do a cost analysis or a benefit analysis, but instead to do a cost-benefit analysis where you consider both sides of the equation. Now, look, because tariffs are taxes, I consider taxes to be bad. I'm not a fan of raising taxes. I have never been a fan of raising taxes, and I am not a fan of raising taxes in this case. There can be some times, you know, you talk about these things with particular countries and particular situations where the line gets a lot closer for, I think, everybody. But generally speaking, it's a pretty basic thing that I believe, which is I don't think raising taxes is a good idea. I don't think it helps economies. I don't think it's a good thing. Beyond that, I also don't believe in central planning. And centralized planning is, I know it's a kind of a negative term for conservatives, or at least used to be, but that's what we're talking about here, right? We're talking about centralized planning by not even Congress, but by one guy. And look, I'd much rather have Donald Trump do it than Nancy Pelosi. There's no doubt about that. But when it comes down to it, you know, you're talking about trying to centrally plan an economy to control economic results. Normally, that's the type of thing that doesn't work out well. We see that in communist countries, in fascist countries, in dictatorships. Those types of things are, it's not because necessarily all people are bad. Obviously, in fascist dictatorships, they're bad. But sometimes people are trying to do the best thing for their country. You know, I think Canada's probably doing that as well. When they put 200% tariffs on our dairy, they're trying to centrally plan their economy. When it comes down to dairy, I don't think that's a good policy for them. And I don't think it's a good policy for us. So that is sort of one of the basis of this concept. Now, tariffs in and of themselves are, yes, taxes, but they're a special kind of tax. They're a tax that I don't think anybody argues that tariffs are good. And Donald Trump will say it's his favorite word and everything else. But when you listen kind of a little bit below the surface, he lays this out pretty well, which is there's going to be some pain associated with this. This is not going to be easy for everybody. It's going to hurt some people. Things are going to cost a little bit more. And that's because a tariff is essentially causing yourself a little bit of pain, where you're going to get the higher prices and you're going to have to try to do this to essentially inflict pain on another group. Maybe it's Canada, maybe it's Mexico, maybe it's Europe, maybe it's China. And the bet there is basically we're the big boys on the block. We will be able to withstand this more than they will. That's why you do the reciprocal tariff type of thing. And we will see, of course, how that works out over time. I also want to say this is a pretty fundamental belief of mine as well. And I know this is one that not every conservative believes anymore, but I do think it's important to state. Free trade has done incredible good for the globe and for you and for the United States. That I don't think is something that is controversial. Now, that does not mean it has done unqualified good. It has not been uninterrupted good. Every single outcome from free trade has not always been positive. There have been particular industries that have been hit hard by globalization and moving things overseas. And that is a part, not all of, but a part of free trade. So it is important to state that it's not universally perfect. I don't think any economic policy can be. By the way, probably isn't every policy I don't like isn't universally bad. There will be some benefits of tariffs if we do implement them in the way that it's being talked about. But it's important not to lose sight of what free trade has done. You might think it's gone too far. You might think that we got all the good out of it and now it's gone. But we have seen incredible positives that have happened. Part of it has been, sure, economic growth here in the United States. But looking even at a bigger, grander scale, and I mean this, taking this above the normal way we talk about stuff, which is usually based on U.S. politics, and looking at this maybe even from, you know, a faith perspective, we care about other people around the globe as well. And we have lowered the global poverty rate from extreme poverty from 40% to 8% in the period where we've embraced free trade. That's an incredible accomplishment, and I don't say this lightly. It is the greatest single accomplishment that human beings have achieved in our lifetimes. That decrease is monumental. It is the greatest thing we've ever done. It is not exclusively because of free trade. It is not exclusively because of what we're talking about today. But largely, it kind of is. I mean, sure, industrialization and improvements in medications and food and all these other things have helped. But when it comes to free trade, you kind of see it play out. Asia is where we really kind of launched all this, where when we opened up trade and some of these countries opened up their markets, we were able to trade largely with Asia and have a real industrial base in Asia. That's also not coincidentally where poverty really decreased. We still have a major poverty problem in Africa, and that is largely because we have not launched a major industrial base in Africa. Rich nations don't really do a lot of that stuff there as compared to Asia. Asia has been the beneficiary. Unfortunately, lagging behind has been Africa. Maybe some of the answers come to broadening that base and maybe in endorsing more trade with some of those countries who can maybe learn a little bit from our constitution and, you know, maybe not have dictatorships like some of those countries do have. So I want to start with that. That is an important part of this. And I think in a conversation that is really difficult, it's nuanced. It's not the easiest thing in the world. It's not always, oh, this is great and this is bad. There are good things and bad things, trade-offs to every single policy here. A lot of people, I mean, Thomas Sowell talked about this, you know, everything is a series of trade-offs. There's not good policy and bad policy. And that is the way that we need to talk about this conversation. Now, Trump aides are drafting their tariff plans as we speak. Some experts are warning of economic damage. And so is Donald Trump. Donald Trump has talked about this. He can't be as clear as Glenn was on radio today, I think, and politically get away with it and say, look, you got cancer. We need to give you the chemo. It's going to be terrible. All your hair is going to fall out. That's not a message that can necessarily, I think, the American people are going to embrace and be comfortable with, even though it might be very much the true conversation. You see bits and pieces of it when you talk about policy. There's a report that came out yesterday where Donald Trump is looking for ways to subsidize farmers for the harm that might come to them from these new tariffs. That's communicating the truth of the matter here, right? This is going to hurt farmers in the short term. It's going to probably hurt you at the dinner table as well. But farmers are going to have real troubles because they're not able to export. And we export. I know it feels like we don't export stuff. We're the number two exporting country in the world. We export a ton. The only country ahead of us has four times our population. We export a lot in this country, and our farmers are awesome at what they do. They produce incredible food that goes all around the world. If they have tariffs, if they can't export as much, they're going to have problems. Donald Trump knows that. And what he's looking to do is sort of subsidize those problems and say, hey, I know we're causing you problems here. We'll get some cash from that. We'll redirect it back to you. Again, this sort of cat and mouse process is scary for me. And it is something that I don't really like. It is eventually come down to the idea that it's you're centralized planning something. You're saying, okay, well, we'll stop this economic activity. We'll regain it over here. We'll take that money. We'll give it to those people. That stuff doesn't typically work well. Not because Donald Trump's a bad guy, but because it's almost impossible. Frankly, maybe he can pull it off. I don't know. I'm going to be rooting for him. That's for sure. Reciprocal tariffs are kind of the new thing. And I think people hear the word reciprocal tariff and they think that's fair, right? If someone else is going to have really high tariffs on us, we have really high tariffs on them. That is fair. And I think in a way it is fair. The fairness isn't all, you know, sometimes things are to your benefit, right? Like if you, if you bring a 16-year-old and you say he's 12 and you put him on your team, that's not fair, but it does benefit your team. We get a lot of benefits from things that are unfair as well. And that's good, by the way. And we should embrace those parts of it. Of course, we want to smooth out the things that are bad for us. Scott Linsicum asked the question, will Trump's reciprocal trade go only one way? And it's an interesting series of questions that I think is part of this discussion. Number one, will Donald Trump, when he says he's going to do reciprocal tariffs, lower the tariffs on countries where our tariffs are higher? I know it feels like we have the lowest, and we have pretty solid free trade policies and have over decades, but they're not always the lowest. Sometimes our trade barriers are higher towards other countries. Should we be lowering to match those other countries if they are lower? I think the argument, I would say yes to that. I just don't know for sure if that's going to be part of it. And the other thing is, like, you know, part of like reciprocal trade is not just, and Trump has talked about this a lot, not just tariff rates, right? It is non-financial tariffs. It's trade blocking and different barriers that are set up that are not necessarily monetary, but also make trade very difficult. Canada does a lot of this. It's not just 400% or 200% tariffs on dairy. They do a lot of this sort of stuff. They play those games there. Do those get removed? You know, and for example, do we remove ours? We have a bunch of Buy American type stuff that is a trade barrier to other countries. If they don't have those, are we removing that? I don't know. It doesn't seem like that's been under discussion, but that would be, I think, more conceptually aligned with a reciprocal tariff situation. So that's another part of this. Canada, by the way, does have 200% tariffs. The question was asked. This is News Nation. Does Canada really have tariffs above 200% on U.S. dairy products? They bring up the examples. Milk up to 243%, butter up to 298%, cheese up to 245%. That is technically accurate. Those do exist. We never pay them, though. It's important to understand we never pay those tariffs. Basically, the way that the USMCA works, this is Donald Trump's trade policy from his first term that he negotiated with Canada and Mexico, basically says we have no tariffs on these products up until a certain limit. And at some limit, it hits these ridiculous numbers. Essentially, what that does is it limits how much we import. We might import up to that limit. We don't really come that close to those limits, by the way, but we might import up to that limit. And then once we hit that limit, we go over it, we start paying 298% tariffs. At that point, we would never continue to import because it would cost too much. It wouldn't make any sense. So should those things just get rid of it? Yeah, I think those are bad policies for Canada. I don't want to replicate them here, right? Like, I don't think Canada's policies are good, and I don't want to have Canada's policies. So I don't think that we should reciprocate those policies, but we will see what's part of that. Europe is potentially now promising to retaliate. They have a strong plan for retaliation against us. So I guess that means if they do retaliate against us, in theory, we would retaliate again. It would seemingly it could escalate from there. China says it is aiming to coordinate tariff response with Japan and South Korea. Now, this is problematic for a lot of reasons. Because we don't want South Korea and Japan becoming allies of China and not us, right? We want them working with us, not with China. So that is a bit concerning. And I think another part of this that we have to consider as we go through this, because reciprocal tariffs, as I mentioned earlier, do kind of give the sense of fairness, right? Like, hey, these are fair. If they're going to do this to us, then we should do this to them. And I think in a way it is fair. But the other thing that you're doing when you adopt a policy like that is you are allowing other countries to set our policy, right? Like if we think Canada's 200% daily or dairy tariff is a bad policy, why would we adopt it? Because we want fairness to be bad on both sides? Like, I don't know. Maybe that is what you want, right? Like, maybe that is the reason to adopt it. But like, when they're setting a policy, they're setting a tariff percentage, and we're just matching it, then they're setting our policy. I, as a sovereign citizen, a citizen of a sovereign country in America, don't want to give that right up to India or China or the Bahamas. I don't want to give it up to anybody. Bahamas have really high tariffs, by the way. So we should be considering whether we want to let other countries set our policy. We think those policies are bad, right? So we don't want to replicate them. And so that is another concern, I think, here. And I think, you know, the average person, you know, look, I know you come to this show mainly for charts. So you're probably diving a lot deeper than most people are. But the typical person is just sitting back and just saying, look, blah, 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 numbers and trade rates, you know, whatever. I want American jobs to come back here. I think it's unfair that they've left. I had a dad, a grandpa, a cousin, a brother who worked in a factory. He liked that job. He made a good living doing it. He had a pension. Now all that's gone. And I don't think that's fair. And you know what? If I got to deal with higher prices going forward in this country, I've got to pay more for all the goods that I'm buying. Fine. You know, I want the jobs back here. I want cars built in my country again. Now, look, a lot of cars are built in this country. Most of the cars that are built in this country have parts built in other countries. Most of the cars built in other countries have lots of parts built here. So it's not quite that simple, but I understand the concept there, right? This is America. We should have cars built here. We should have clothes built here. We should have things built here. And some of that stuff, some of these tariffs will work to bring back some manufacturing to this country. That is, I think, unquestionable, at least in the short term. One example of this is from Donald Trump's first term. And there's echoes of this through Barack Obama's term, going back to Bill Clinton, who, even though he's kind of touted as a free trade guy, as far as a Democrat goes, still was using tariffs as well. South Carolina did this with washing machines, and South Carolina benefited from this. Like, I can't deny this. I'm not a tariff fan, but I can't deny that South Carolina benefited from this. Tariffs helped a South Carolina town. They left American shoppers worse off. And this is where you come to a cost-benefit analysis and not just a benefit analysis. Also, not just a cost analysis. It's important to note that about 1,500 jobs were brought in when these tariffs went on. Trump put them on washing machines. They started building Samsung said, we're going to build a factory in South Carolina now. We don't want to pay those tariffs. They came in. They started building them in South Carolina. And 1,500 people got jobs. Those are jobs that keep lasting year after year after year while these tariffs are on. That's positive. It did wind up costing us $1.5 billion per year to consumers. So consumers subsidize these 1,500 jobs at about a rate of about $900,000 to $1 million a year. Now, of course, these people aren't getting paid $1 million a year. It would have been more efficient to just give them $200,000 a year each, and we could have created five times the amount of jobs, and they wouldn't have done anything. They might not have made any washing machines, but or maybe they did. Who knows? The question here is efficiency. The rate when Obama did this with steel tariffs was very similar, about $900,000 per job. Another concern here, and this happened in the Obama tariffs when he did this with steel, is they did create new steel jobs. That did happen. However, steel wound up costing more, and the companies that made things with steel wound up losing more than 10,000 jobs when all of the analysis came down at the end. All I'm saying here, and this is a fundamental conservative belief, it's not a liberal belief. This is not a, the media might be saying that tariffs are bad today until a Democrat presents them later, and then they'll say they're wonderful. But this is a conservative belief that centralized planning in an economy is really freaking hard and probably shouldn't be tried whenever possible. Maybe there are some exceptions to that, but that is a fundamental belief that we should all consider as we go into this. I hope all this works. I mean, my belief is I hope that Donald Trump is just using this as a threat. We've seen this over and over again. He has used this as a threat. There is examples of this working right now as this approaches on our tariff day today. Israel has nixed all U.S. import tariffs the day before Trump is set to levy duties on trade allies. Now, it's a little bit more complicated with Israel. Israel, their priority here, I do not think, is trade policy. Their priority is Hamas policy. They need the support of the United States, and they're going to do whatever they can to make Donald Trump happy right now. So I don't know if this is really their long-term approach on tariffs. This is my chosen outcome, though. This is what I want to happen. Stu wants this to happen. I want these trade threats to go and say, hey, 0% tariffs across the board. Maybe it'll happen. I think that's good. But if tariffs are good policy, which is what a lot of people are arguing these days, do we want that? Do we want them to go to 0%? That's what I want. But do we want that? Is that what Trump wants? Because if Trump wants to bring manufacturing back, and that is the actual goal of this policy, it's not going to work if everyone goes to 0%. The manufacturing is going to stay over there. So what do we want out of this? What is our goal? Do we want to lower tariffs? Is that our goal? That's my goal. Or do we want to bring manufacturing back to the United States? Those are two separate goals that don't really work together, because if tariffs work and bring manufacturing back, then we no longer have the income from those tariffs. If the tariffs go to zero, then that manufacturing doesn't come back. Whatever this is, I will say Trump is, you know, he's believed this for as long as I've known him. From 40, 50 years ago, when he became into the public eye, he's believed in this policy. He deserves credit for the outcomes here. The media won't give it to him if things go well. The right probably won't give him, assign a lot of blame if things go poorly, but he deserves credit for whatever the outcome is from these policies, because he's pretty unique in his beliefs here. And if he can nail this perfectly, he deserves incredible credit. If things don't go well, he also deserves credit for that. So it's a lot to talk about and a lot to consider. It's a very busy day, and I don't know what other audience would swallow a very complicated tariff marathon like that, but welcome to Liberation Day. That's what you got. We have Glenn Beck coming up here in a minute. I want to talk to him about not only tariffs, but also where that goes with AI and how Donald Trump is being attacked by the courts. We'll get into that next. Let me hit you with a couple of questions. Are you accidentally bankrolling woke nonsense with every investment that you make? Do you even know? I don't know that I would have known 6 months ago or a year ago. Are your hard-earned dollars being used to undermine the Trump agenda and, you know, the last shred of what's left in the Constitution? If that's happening to you right now, you might not even know it, and you need to know it, right? When you're busting your tail out there, Wall Street's, you know, using your money for, like, what, ESG garbage and stuff that makes AOC feel good? That's insane. This is why I partner with Constitution Wealth. These guys get it. They're not just a bunch of boardroom suits. They are actual patriots who believe in the same America that you and I do. They're building a parallel economy, one portfolio at a time, and helping you put your money where your values are. Now, it's not about investing, you know, in companies that hate your guts. They can redirect you around that stuff. So here's the move. Go over to constitutionwealth.com/blaze. Go there now. Book a free consultation. Figure out exactly what your money is doing behind your back. It's constitutionwealth.com/blaze, constitutionwealth.com/blaze. Yes, I'm a client. Yes, this is a paid endorsement. And yes, you should read the disclosures, because freedom and financial sanity, you know, pretty much worth it. It's constitutionwealth.com/blaze, constitutionwealth.com/blaze.
Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Plötzlich fühle ich mich so entspannt.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Tiefenentspannt mit Wieso-Steuer.
Joined once again by Glenn Beck. He has a brand new special coming up 9 p.m. Eastern tonight right here on Blaze TV. It's Who's Funding the Judicial Coup Against Trump? Be sure to stay tuned and we'll get into that. Glenn, I was just finishing up a commentary on tariffs. And, you know, I'm not a huge fan. Not a huge fan.
I didn't get that. I didn't pick that up.
It's subtle. Yeah. It's okay, subtle. Yeah, you really have to be listening closely. Right. But I also am not skeptical of Trump's motivations here. I think they're good. I think he wants to make the country a better place. But I was,
It's weird. When's the last time you had a president that you were like, I think he's actually doing it for the right reasons?
Right. Isn't that wonderful?
Like, it's nice.
It's a nice thing to have. But like I was thinking of this in context of you and I was thinking of doing, you know, we were talking about tariffs. It's a big topic of the day. And obviously we've talked about tariffs a million times. But one thing we haven't talked about, and I'm surprised we haven't talked about, is this as it works with AI. Because we've done a lot of conversations about AI. And the fundamental thing that Trump's motivation is here, and if this works, it'll hopefully reinvigorate American manufacturing and bring American manufacturing jobs back here. But as I'm looking at the intersection of that line with the rising line of AI, I start thinking about, well, what jobs are there going to be here? If AI is going to come in and do all the change these industries this way, are we trying to bring back something that's not even going to exist?
You know, you bring up an interesting point because we have talked about it in the way when we talked about retooling the Pentagon.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, don't. Mm-hmm. Why are you building any of that?
Right.
So you bring up a good point. I don't know the answer would be that different than where I am on the Pentagon. No, we know things are going to be changing, but let's not start a brand new airplane that's going to take us 10 years to finish.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It'll be completely obsolete.
It'll be completely obsolete by that time. But you have to take steps. There are things that we may know that, for instance, making medicine is going to change. And so we don't necessarily need the same kind of laboratories, but we know we are going to be making medicine. So let's get those companies to say, yeah, we're going to bring the manufacturing back here. They will, when they bring it back, they're not going to be like, and we're old school. They know. Mm-hmm. So it'll give them a chance to use AI. And by the time they're building it, I mean, the change in AI in the next year is going to be remarkable. So they'll know a little closer to what they need. And just like everything, you build towards the future.
Yeah. I know we spent a lot of time over the years talking about the negatives of AI. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just looking at our kids' homework or jobs being lost and all these things. What is AI going to do for medication? What is it going to do for the possibility of curing these diseases? There's all this big talk. What's realistic?
Oh, I don't think anybody could say, but cure to cancer, probably by 2030.
Wow, that's big. Now, Joe Biden promised to turn to cure.
Well, he'll still be alive. He'll still be in the White House kicking.
Okay, good.
But not in necessarily the way, and I've said this before, I asked AI, is there anyone, including you, predict what life is going to be like in 5 years, okay? Because if AI is going to change that much in 5 years, and no one can predict what those changes are going to be, and we can't predict how it learns or how it solves problems, can anyone predict what life will be like in 2030? Right. And it said no. And it said it couldn't even predict because it's going to think differently. And it used this example. For instance, if you tell me in 5 years, show me the cure for cancer, my answer might be, why? And that frightened me when I read that. I was like, well, because it's deadly. Do you not care about people?
Right.
Its answer was, why? I might respond with why, when it's easier for me to rewrite the entire genetic code for humans so cancer doesn't affect it.
Oh my God.
Okay? So that's the kind of thinking where, you know, when it comes to manufacturing, for instance, steel, we need steel. We need all kinds of stuff. Or do we? because another example it gave me was airplanes. If I said, because I gave it the airplane, you know, should we be building new stealth anything right now? Or should we save that money, pour that into AI, so AI can design? And it talked about how it will design things. For instance, it will design, let's say you want a stealth bomber, okay? And you you want it to go 2,000, 2,500, 3,000 miles an hour. And it needs to be able to be safe from all drones, and it needs to go so fast, but we can't because we don't have the alloys. It said that it predicts that by 2030, it will just look at the periodic table and go, well, you take this, 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 you combine it this way, it'll make this alloy, you then build the ship this way, and you don't even have to test it. It will be accurate as laid out on paper. So you could go from question, answer, produce, fly it.
Almost like a chef would look at a pantry, right?
Yes.
Like they, all they hear are the ingredients. Oh, I can make this incredible dish out of this stuff.
Right, and you're like, I don't know how he just did that. It's magic.
Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff that is coming. So when you talk about building any real infrastructure, the thing I wish the country was focused on was build nuclear power plants and server farms, because that's what's going to put us in the driver's seat. Do you have enough power? Yeah. Do you have enough computer capacity? You know, right now you're getting, if you go to ChatGPT or any of these, anything, Gemini, Grok, you're only getting a fraction. And when I say we're only getting a little sliver of the computing power, because everything on top of that is trying to solve problems like, how do we go to ASI? Okay, how do we keep growing and growing and growing and learning so it becomes an all-powerful ASI? All of them are doing that.
Artificial superintelligence.
Yeah. So we're all the computing power that all of us are using right now on Grok that we think are so amazing. It's like 1% of its power. Okay. And right now they're starting to close that window on a lot of things and choking that down as much as they can because they don't have the computing power yet.
Yeah.
So
is that why you're limited on messages and stuff on some of these things?
Yes.
They're always trying to like,
because they only can allow the consumer to have this much because the company says, I need 98% of its think on us. So I'm going to release to the global consumer only 2% of its think.
Mm.
So we should be building nuclear power plants and we should be looking to build server farms. That's what we should be encouraging right now, because those are the answers and those are the things that will keep the country safe and prosperous.
Let me go back to a specific here, because you're talking about the cancer thing. You know, I've heard it discussed before where cancer, we say cure for cancer, but like what we're talking about are 1,000 different little tiny diseases that like are totally different. And so there's not a cure for cancer. Like the cure would be maybe 1,000 different things.
Sure.
But what we think about when we think about medicine, we take a medicine and a doctor might say, look, you know, 3/4 of people get much better on this, right? It reacts differently in each individual person.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the right thing to think about, basically, that we might have individualized medications?
You will. Hospitals will have. The Huntsman Clinic in Salt Lake already does this for cancer. They have a hallway. Here's all of, on this side of the hospital are all of the patient rooms. Across the hallway are the laboratories. And so they do your labs, your blood tests and everything else. And then they look for the right cure for you. So it's individualized cancer treatment. Okay. It's not just, we're going to give you chemo and here it is off the shelf.
Right.
And I don't know how many hospitals, I'm sure most hospitals are all individualized, but they were leading the way on making sure that they're looking at each individual. And that's exactly what AI will do. It will look at your DNA structure. It will look at your genomes. It will see where you have things that need to be repaired. It will say that medicine won't work for you, but this one will. I mean, we do this all the time. We have to try different medicines because it doesn't always work the same
right.
for people.
And instead of it being trial and error, it's something that's specifically
right.
designed for an individual.
Correct.
Like a specific compound correct. That might affect you differently than somebody else.
My body processes drugs and everything else. I mean, it's so frustrating. Ozempic, I was on Ozempic, love Ozempic. I lost like 40 pounds. I cannot lose another pound because it stopped working for me. Because my body constantly adapts and just gets rid of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it was my alcoholism or what, but I have a high metabolism, just burns through these things.
Any substance, it just assumes it's
it
bad.
It just assumes it's bad.
Yeah, and it's probably more cocaine.
Yeah. So, you know, I would love the AI to be able to look at me and say, what will last?
Yeah.
What will work for him? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it really...
That's what's coming.
And I think of, when you think of long-term how this plays out, we're going to put up with a lot of negatives to get that.
Right? Like you're going to put up with...
We'll put up with any...
Here's all my blood. Here's everything that you need.
Yeah.
Here's every way to track me, trace me, know every flaw in me. You know, whether I'm going to get Alzheimer's in the future, whether I'm prone to this or that, it's all going to be there.
And you've been saying forever... that this reality requires a bunch of really important conversations that happen before
yeah.
we get there.
Yeah.
But are we too late?
And we're close. And one of those is insurance. If AI can look at your individual makeup and go, you're going to have a heart attack. You have this chance of this.
Gosh.
There is no risk involved in insurance anymore. They know. So are you going to be insurable?
Why would you insure someone?
Why would I insure somebody like that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If there's no secrets, if it's all out there and the government is in bed with these, you know, AI or pharmaceutical companies, how are you going to insure the insurable?
Right. So last one here, because there's so much more to go on, but we're out of time. What should our expectations of privacy be with these things?
Zero.
We're typing a lot of crap into
zero. There's no more privacy. Zero.
Zero expectation.
Zero
of privacy.
Expectation.
How does a society run with zero privacy?
Sure. It's going to be interesting to see how that all works out, isn't it? It's you know, you haven't even hit quantum computing yet. As soon as we hit quantum computing, no national secrets. No. Secrets. You may be able to think that there are secrets, but those who have access to quantum computing, there will be no secrets. None. There will be no secrets. You cannot encrypt enough to be able to keep. You can't encrypt now. Signal, you know, when that was out, before we all knew that it was, oh, that's a CIA operative. they were still saying, this is good. Until you get to government level, state level encryption, okay? You can't protect against the state because they have the computing power to, you know, get into anything,
mm-hmm.
right? It's going to be like that with the states now. So China will have to have quantum computing at the same time, or we can hack in and launch all their missiles against them. Okay. Somebody else will be able with quantum computing to come in and hack anything in the United States and shut us all down. And it will happen. And there's no way to prevent that. It'll be, it's not just AI. That will be the war of encryption that's coming with quantum computing.
You said it before. It's going to be really interesting to see how this all plays out.
It is.
Fascinating. Glenn Beck, the new special is 9 p.m. Eastern. Be sure to stay tuned tonight. It's called Who's Funding the Judicial Coup yeah. Against Trump?
And thank you for spending so much time on this special.
We have another break. Would you like to stay by and just talk,
yeah,
talk
sure.
about it?
Okay, yeah, I will.
Right. Well, we're going to take a break. We'll come back in just a second with Glenn Beck.
Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Cespri Sangold Kiwi. Das Stück für nur 55 Cent. Oder dunkle Tafeltrauben. 500 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi.
Gutes für alle.
If America hasn't broken your heart, you don't love her enough.
Oh.
Because there's so much heartbreak and fear and pain in a nation where people are seeing their economic hopes and dreams of maybe buying a home or having the money to help their kids with school or to meet their basic needs, where so many Americans are one flat tire, one $400 hit to their account, and they're suddenly doing payday loans.
What?
Or having to struggle to find a way through. There's so much heartbreak in this country.
So much heartbreak. None of it in Newark, right?
Great love means you make yourself vulnerable to having that heartbreak.
Ah, see that great love. God, this guy is so cheesy. Cory Booker is setting a record with his marathon Senate speech. Will it rally anti-Trump resistance? Now, of course, this is an interesting question that is not really the point of the speech. The point of the speech is not to rally anti-Trump resistance. I don't know if you've noticed this. People already resist Trump pretty much of everything he does. The point of this speech, of course, is to get Cory Booker on your radar so that he can run for president in 2028. He already failed once. He's got probably one more shot left in him, or you know, he's going to be a frequent candidate, which is always the downturn of any particular candidate. So he's going to try this one more time, probably. This is his chance to get attention for it. And actually, it's not even completely about attention. He's not even saying it was really for a cause or to create anti-Trump resistance. He's saying he was mad that Strom Thurmond had the old record. He says it irked him that Strom Thurmond had the previous record to stop people like me from being in the Senate. In other words, he was doing a segregation speech, and he was upset that, Cory Booker, he doesn't want him to have the record, which, frankly, fine with me. I'm no Strom Thurmond fan, but also Cory Booker sucks too. He just, you know, they have different skin color, but they both suck. I will say this: his performance was magnificent. I mean, give the guy an Oscar, right? The tears are welling up. He just cares so much about this country that he seems to hate on every other day, and this is really, really important that you understand. This is the sort of passion that brings him to the forefront of not only the politics, but also our consumer world. I remember when he released the new cologne that he developed years ago. It was called Tears of Rage.
Life is pain.
I hurt.
Suffering is national.
Tens of millions of Americans are hurting right now.
Memories are fleeting.
Your silence and your amnesia is complicity.
Statistics are complicated.
I don't know if 73% of your time is spent on white supremacist hate groups.
Words are hard.
The fact pattern is clear of the threats in this country.
For those tender moments when an overly eager senator tries to mansplain simple concepts to the Secretary of Homeland Security.
For you not to feel that hurt and that pain.
You need the new cologne, Tears of Rage.
Tears of Rage.
Righteous condescension you can smell and feel. Available now in the cologne aisle of select New Jersey Kroger markets.
That's unacceptable to me.
Caution. Tears of Rage may cause extreme pandering and may lead to acute levels of embarrassment when you watch videos of your pathetic performance. Tears of Rage should not be used in conjunction with a future presidential campaign.
We made it all the way to 2025, and people still think the grocery store will always be open and the pharmacy will always be stocked. Nothing could ever go wrong, right? Have you lived through the last 5 years? We've had pandemics, supply chain breakdowns, people lighting cities on fire, blackouts, cyber attacks. And apparently now the government even wants to regulate what kind of stove you have until very recently. But sure, you know, be completely convinced that your local Walgreens is going to have every single medication you need when disaster hits. They might. I hope they do. But you don't know. And that's why you want to be your own first responder. It means having a real emergency plan and the right tools. Those tools, there's a wide swath of things you need. But the Jace case is a big part of this. It's a legit doctor-prescribed pack of 5 life-saving antibiotics that can treat everything from a simple infection to stuff you can actually be afflicted by, go to the hospital for, die from. And yeah, they'll even let you have ivermectin if you really want to trigger your liberal cousin. That'll piss them off quite a bit.
do what smart people are doing. Go to Jase.com right now. Use the promo code STU at checkout for a discount. Jase.com, Jase.com. The promo code is STU. Prep smarter, not later, not when it's too late. It's Jase.com. The code is STU. Got a great show coming up for you tomorrow. Kevin Roberts is going to be here. Dave Landau will be here. Lots of great stuff I think you'll enjoy. Subscribe, blazetv.com/stew. The code is STU. We'll see you tomorrow.